Welcome to the Combat Radio Network. This is Three Men and a Microphone, recorded inside the Iron Mike Studio, located in the Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua. Three Men and a Microphone is an opinion show based on the ins and outs, the news, politics, and scuttlebutt about town and the city of Canandaigua. Beautiful, historical Canandaigua, New York, where the hops grow higher, the grapes grow sweeter, and the sun always shines. In conjunction with 1310 AM, Canandaigua, Three Men and a Microphone, all the way from Rochester to Geneva, New York. I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone. And we'll be right back after these messages. Can I get a drink? Sumatra, pull down the shades. Duro, lock the door. We're gonna party. Can you hear me? How long I've been up? Welcome, enlisted and officers, WMs and Devil Dogs. I'm Corporal Tim Thornton, your host for tonight. This is the DD214 and Laurel Cigar Lounge, fresh from the Dominican Republic, Hickory Mono Cigars, here at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Smoking lamp is out. Welcome to Civil War Radio, and this is WOKR 1310 in conjunction with Three Men and a Microphone Combat Radio Network, and this is Armin Marinetti and Civil War Radio.
Good morning, everybody. I always give that little reminder about the Civil War part, just in case somebody's tuning in and they don't know. Mike, you want to step in and we'll split it this time? You could do the civil, I'll do the war.
Okay, so go civil ahead. Means that we're going to be kind to each other in our discussions.
Yeah, we're going to be adults. And the war part.
I could do the war part?
No, you're out. You go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I want to do battle.
That's right. You do the war part.
War is battle. War is where we argue. We disagree. We don't get along. But in Civil War Radio, on this program, we do.
Yep. And Mike's wearing his Free Speech Zone t-shirt today. I forgot, because we are talking about the First Amendment, which has a lot to do with freedom of speech. But before we get going here, quick quiz question. I'm going to put it out front, and then that way people can listen and they'll get the answer as we're talking. There's going to be five individual freedoms that we talk about today. Five individual freedoms. List them. Send me a message or a comment on Civil War Radio. Join the group. It's painless. I don't think it costs $100. No, just kidding. I made that up. That's not true. So join the group and then put on there. And we did have a winner from last week. I didn't get permission to mention his name, but he was kind enough to say, keep the gift certificate for someone else. So that still stands. If you can get the five individual freedoms that we discussed this morning, you can win a gift certificate to a business of your choice in our listening area. How's that sound?
That's good. And so, that actually would be Livingston, Ontario, Monroe, and Wayne County.
Yep. So
okay. It should be mentioned, too, that the question last week was about what are the first 10
we should answer them.
Called?
Yes.
And that was?
The Bill of Rights.
The Bill of Rights.
And the three branches of government are?
Right.
There's three of us. Go ahead.
Judicial.
The legislative.
And the executive.
There you go.
All right. good. So, and Melissa, she's nodding her head in agreement. She's our she's our tiebreaker. All right, so going back to the First Amendment. The First Amendment is probably one of the most popular in a little bit of history. Back when the Constitution was agreed upon, there was some dissent. And there's a ratification process that we talked about in previous episodes. And the people from Virginia, mostly, they were worried that this new government was going to be too strong and would trample individual rights, kind of similar to King George III
right.
did to the English that were living over here. So two groups formed. One was called the Federalists, which James Madison is probably one of the better known members of the Federalist, and the other group was called the Anti-Federalist, which a gentleman by the name of Patrick Henry out of Virginia, Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, was a famous member, and so was Thomas Jefferson. So these two groups battled it out about how are we going to compromise so that the new nation could live under one constitution, one rule book. So here's what they came up with, a Bill of Rights. The first 10 amendments to our U.S. Constitution are known as the Bill of Rights. And the one that we're talking about today is the First Amendment. I'm going to list those five rights, and then we're going to look into them. And then I'm going to talk about some key court, Supreme Court cases that tested each of those rights in the First Amendment. Okay? And you guys have any questions, please stop me, and we'll try to cover that. So here they are for you listeners with pen and paper. We have protection under the First Amendment of freedom and no establishment of a nationwide religion, freedom of speech with some limits. We'll talk about those. Freedom of press with some limits. Everything is not carte blanche, open door. We also have a freedom to peaceably assemble, key word there, peaceably. And then the fifth one is freedom to petition our government for redress of grievances. Okay. So now what's all those fancy words mean? Let's break it down into everyday terms. Our government cannot establish religion. Remember back during our war for independence, there was a Church of England, believe it or not. And the government, King George III, supported that church, and so did the subjects of the king, which were most of the colonists, or many of the colonists, over here in the New World. Okay, so a lot of people saw that as being very tyrannical. How's that for a word? That means a tyrant doesn't put up with anybody's guff. You know, I'm in charge, you do what I say, or we get rid of you, basically. Okay, so the people here said, no, you know, we've got a king 3,000 miles across the Atlantic Ocean, and, you know, we do things a little bit different here in this new land. So they wanted to make sure that this new government could not establish a religion that we all had to adhere to. Okay, any questions about that so far? Now, I noticed doing research, I used different sources. Let me list a couple sources. I like history.com. You've heard me mention that before, because you can go on, you could read, you could watch a video, and I think they're pretty well done. They're professionally done. So history.com is one of my favorite sources. Of course, we got the U.S. Constitution, and I'm using this version here, which is put out by the Annenberg Group, which gives you a what it means and what it says comparison. So they try to modernize these amendments as well. And then I think this young man, well, he's not young anymore. He was young when we were in college. This gentleman was one of my roommates for 3 out of 4 years. His name is Sylvan Sobel, S-O-B-E-L. His name is right there. And he wrote a series of children books for 8-year-olds and up that really, if you want a quick review of how the government works, the Bill of Rights, he's got about 6 different ones. This is a good source just to get the juices flowing. So I like to go to this first because it's very quick to read, and it summarizes things so that young people can understand it.
Pictures.
And it has pictures, too. I mean, they're all illustrations that are done by young people. so that he gives credit to the people in here, too. So, Sylvan, if you're listening way down there in...
The Villages?
No, he's in... he's near Washington, D.C., because he just finished a 30-year career with the judiciary. Wow. He was an editor for Judicial Review, which is a federal publication that goes to all the federal judges across the country. But he's a good guy. He's a plain-spoken person, and he lives in Maryland, Potomac. North Potomac, Maryland is where he lives. So, Sylvan, there you go. Good book. I like it. I use it. Anyway, where were we? Court cases? You want to go right into some court cases?
Sure.
All right. We did a little bit of history.
Right. So we're talking about freedom of religion here.
Yeah. What I was going to say, thank you for reminding me, Mike, is that most of my sources that I checked out, except for Sylvan's book, believe it or not, freedom of religion is the first one mentioned in the Constitution, but all my sources didn't mention that until later down. They mentioned speech, press first, and then maybe third or later. Freedom of religion. I thought that was odd when I was doing research. But Sylvan did it in order, just like it appears in our U.S. Constitution. Because you're right, Mike, the first one is freedom of religion. So I just, my antenna went off and I said, why are these resources or sources for information not kind of doing it in order? I don't know. I'm puzzled.
Okay.
So, all right. So I'm going to use a local Supreme Court situation. That was recently from 2014. You guys ever hear of Town of Greece versus Galloway?
Yes,
we have a yes. Melissa, good. You want to chime in or you want me to keep going?
Keep going.
All right. So this Supreme Court case was about saying a prayer or invocation. I'm not sure.
I believe it was a prayer in Town Hall.
Town Hall, before you began your Town Hall meeting. Some people that were in attendance thought that was inappropriate and was violating the Establishment of Religion Clause in the First Amendment. So they took it to court, and they won on the lower levels, and it climbed its way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, with a 5-4 decision, said, nope, not violating the Constitution Establishment Clause, it's okay to have some religious comments before, or spiritual comments maybe more, because I don't think they mentioned a particular religion. They have some spiritual comments before a town hall meeting. Okay? Any questions, thoughts, comments?
Well, I think as part of that decision, they said you couldn't have just one church come in every month and do that. You had to work it around so that... No single church was being promoted.
You're right. And we're getting the 10-minute sign, so I'm going to start. Don't say that. See, I'm a rookie here. I don't know that stuff. All right, the next one, which is a very big one, is freedom of speech. And the court case that I'm going to mention is from 1919, which is after World War I, but the incident that brought this about was during World War I, and it's Schenck versus the United States. This gentleman, Mr. Schenck, was a member of the Communist Party, which was growing, because if you remember, the Russian Revolution was 1917, and World War I was going on. The Russians pulled out of World War I because they had problems at home with this revolution. So he was handing out flyers saying, don't register for the draft. It's an unjust war. Don't want to do that. So he was brought to court because of he said, I can do this. It's freedom of speech. You know, I'm exercising my constitutional rights. Well, the Supreme Court said, no, you can't. 9-0. During a time of war, there could be a clear and present danger. That phrase comes from this particular
ruling
that causes harm to the nation. So your free speech is limited. And you ever hear of, you can't shout fire in a crowded theater?
Yeah, I heard that.
That famous phrase came from this Supreme Court decision as well, which means that you can't, just for the fun of it, when you're in a situation where there's a lot of people, disrupt them so there's violence, a riot might occur. So that's why we can't shout fire in a crowded theater. All right, moving right along here. Next one is freedom of press. I'm going to bring this up to 1971, and last time we talked about The Post, which is a new movie out that actually addresses the New York Times versus the United States, and it was during the Nixon years, and this is about the Pentagon Papers. The question was, can the New York Times and the Washington Post print classified information that was gathered in these Pentagon Papers by Daniel Ellsberg? And in these papers, they cover our U.S. foreign policy all the way back to, I think, Eisenhower, and how we had national interests in Vietnam as well as South America and other spots around the world. So the decision, you know, which I'm sorry I didn't mark down how it voted, I mean how it turned out, but both the New York Times and the Washington Post were able to print the Pentagon Papers. So the court decided in favor of those.
Of the press.
Of the press, yep. Yeah. Next, Assemble. This one we don't hear so much about, but I'm trying to find something that's current. Assemble, we have a freedom to assemble and associate, which has been kind of connected in the research that I did. And the case that I want to mention was the Boy Scouts of America et al., E-T-A-L, which is Latin for including, right? There's right. More than just them, versus Dale. Dale was a scout master that came out and announced that he was homosexual. And what happened there is that the Boy Scouts thought that it was inappropriate to have a homosexual scout master dealing with young men that are very impressionable, and there might be situations where they're in private. So they wanted to remove Dale from the Boy Scouts leadership role. And he sued them, and it worked its way up in the year 2000 all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court decided 5-4 in favor of the Boy Scouts of America. So they agreed that it wasn't appropriate to have homosexual leadership or members in the Boy Scouts because of their initial role is to help young men grow to be pretty much self-sufficient. Okay.
And has that been challenged since then?
It has been. And I'm not prepared to discuss it. You know, maybe I can do some homework and come back, but it has been challenged. You know, 2000 years, that's 18 years ago.
Right.
Doesn't seem that long until you do the math. So a lot's happened in these past 18 years. So moving on.
Including possibly allowing girls to be part of the Boy Scouts.
Right, which, okay. Topic for a later discussion.
Right.
Okay. The last one here is the freedom to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And the court case that I want to toss out there was from 1999. And it's Buckley versus American Constitutional Law Foundation, which is an organization that you can look up online and find out more about them. But what the background is that in the state of Colorado, the state took some action to limit people passing petitions. I believe it was for candidates or if they had something that was, what's it called when they show something up on the ballot? We just had that recently.
Like a resolution?
Like a resolution. So people would go out and pass petition. Well, Colorado said, well, you got to have a name tag. You got to tell us how much you're getting paid. You got to tell us who's paying you. You got to do this, got to do that. So there was a whole list of certain things. They want financial disclosure. How are you being paid? Are you an employee? Are you a contractor? How much are they paying you? Blah, blah, blah. And this worked its way all the way up to the Supreme Court, and Colorado lost, basically. I'm not sure who Buckley is. I didn't see who he is. I'm guessing he was probably some election official in the state of Colorado, but I'll have to double-check that. The Supreme Court said 6-3 that those requirements are unconstitutional. There's no reason why a person passing a petition has to meet these requirements. And just a little side comment. I used a website called oye.org, O-Y-E-Z, Oye, oye, oye is usually how they open up the Supreme Court session.
Okay.
If you want to go, Cornell's Legal Information Institute has something to do with this particular website. So if you want to check it out, it's oyez.org. So go check that out, and you'll see where some of this information is coming from. I think that pretty much covers what I had to talk about. Any questions, anything that you want to bring up to today?
Okay. So we recently had a situation on St. John Fisher campus where they were talking about a political cartoon that appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed a map of the United States with, like, female eyes on it and a hand across its lower border. And there was another hand reaching up as if to grab the United States that was portrayed as kind of a female. And it said on it, my border's my choice, as opposed to my body's my choice. And it said, no means no.
Mm-hmm.
So they were obviously trying to equate sexual assault with illegal immigration. And St. John Fisher went around and they pulled all these things. And initially when I saw the story, I thought it was a local cartoon, political cartoon, that some student had drawn. Well, it turns out, no, it was actually a national campaign launched by the alt-right to try to have these distributed on campuses across the country. Some students at St. John Fisher apparently found this very offensive. And in my opinion, I didn't find it that offensive, and I thought, well, that's kind of strange. But I also thought, well, in all places, shouldn't our educational institutions be places where we do have more freedom of speech?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what's your thought on that?
I agree with your last comment there. I think educational institutions are supposed to be like a colander where you could bring in all these ingredients and try to mix them up and talk about them. But you got to be fair. I mean, you have to have the other side as well. So I think that I wasn't aware of that until this morning, that
right.
situation. I think we're going to see that progress.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, who knows? That might be a future Supreme Court case because I don't think St. John Fisher is going to have the authority to limit those because if there's no danger to the population on campus, you've got to come up with a hypothetical to say, no, you can't put those out there. You know, we're going to limit your freedom of speech.
Right.
So,
well, that's a fresh story. So it's one we'll be following as it develops.
Yeah, and that's it. Good. Okay, we're done.
Finish.
All right, I was going to say that we're looking for extra U.S. constitutions. I'm going to throw this out there. Marty and Rhonda, you know who you are. I know you had a lot of U.S. constitutions at one time. So if you have some and you want to drop them off here at Iron Mike's, please do because we're going to put them right here on the counter for people to take.
Great. At Civil War Radio, Armin Marinetti.
Thanks, Armin.
Yeah, thank you,
Michael
guys.
Yarger, Melissa Walker, myself, Corporal Tim Thornton, and we'll be right back after these messages.
I have to remind you, what gift did you get me?
What's the matter, cupcake? Winter's here and all you have to look forward to is yellow snow. That Einstein you're dating wants to know where the white goes when the snow melts. Thinking of all the fun you'll have schlepping home at 20 miles an hour? Car won't start, mud, slush, salt, traffic accidents, shoveling, brushing, and wading through a snowdrift just to check the mail? Your boots leak and you only have one glove and it's stuck? Frozen wipers, locks, fingers, toes, and noses. Hey, at Iron Mike's, the Military Exchange, we agree. Winter sucks. So let us help you bear the frozen tundra that is upstate New York. The Military Exchange has everything you'll ever need to kick the crap out of old man winter. Warm hats, caps, gloves, socks, long underwear, Polypro, thermal, wiki, and super wiki. Gore-Tex insulates, wool, jackets, parkas, pants, and boots. There's lots of fun things to do in the snow, but none of it's fun unless you gear up. At Iron Mike's, the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Stop in and see Corporal Thornton. He'll even show you how to write your name in the snow.
Great googly moogly.
Thank you.
back to Three Men and a Microphone, and this is SCOPE, which is and stands for...
What are you pointing at me for?
I want you to say it. How about you, Don? I'm here with Don Smith, Director-at-Large for State Board and SCOPE, and he's our speaker for today. Don, what does SCOPE exactly stand for?
It stands for Shooters Committee on Political Education.
There you go. And how are you today, and how is the business of SCOPE?
We're doing well, actually. We've grown over the past, 4 or 5 years, thanks to Governor Cuomo.
You know, that's funny. I like that.
One of your best friends, obviously.
Well, just think of how big you'd be if Hillary got in office.
There you go.
Yeah. No, for a while.
Well, Mr. Cuomo would like to sit down there in Washington, I understand, too. No, actually, the SAFE Act, which was passed on January 15th of 2013, provided the impetus for many gun owners and actually non-gun owners to join SCOPE. You know, there are a lot of folks in this state who believe in our rights, civil rights and constitutional rights. They realize that the state has trampled on those rights. I'm talking about something as basic as due process. And they're still being trampled on every day. We essentially have lost our rights in this state, and folks are not aware of that. Yeah. Now, the SAFE Act itself was essentially a set of amendments to existing laws, such as the penal law, business law, mental health law, etc. So each of these were impacted by the SAFE Act. And the provisions that were added to these individual laws, of course, now we're attempting to deal with them. For example, one of the greatest problems we've run into, and again, this includes non-gun owners as well as gun owners, is the fact that they modified the mental health law. Now, in the past, if you were a mental health provider, that would be a doctor, psychiatrist, etc., and you had a patient, and this patient perhaps demonstrated to you in some way that they might, perhaps be a danger to themselves or someone else, okay? The doctor could draw the conclusion that it was an imminent danger and action needed to be taken rather soon. In fact, the doctor had the right under Section 9.41 of the mental health law, which still exists, by the way, to contact law enforcement. They could be brought in, remove the patient, take them to a hospital for examination. What the SAFE Act included was an amendment, provision 9.46, to the mental health law. Now, what's wrong with that? Well, it took away one of the two criterions. It took away imminency. So therefore, a medical provider now might be discussing a situation with a patient, might say, there's a likelihood that this patient could cause a danger to themselves or someone else. Imminency was removed. The second criterion was removed from the mental health law under this particular provision. It gives the medical provider the opportunity to contact the state directly through a special phone line. They call it an ISARS line. And this individual will find themselves receiving a knock on the door. I'm talking about the patient now. Law enforcement will appear with a court order, and they will remove the pistol permit that individual has owned for Lord knows how many years, and all of their firearms, by the way. Not just permitted firearms, not just handguns. They will remove all guns, long guns included. There is no due process. You don't have the opportunity to face your accuser. You have no idea who made this report. In fact, the judge who writes the order that allows the law enforcement to knock on your door, that judge does not know who made the complaint. And as a result, you're losing your own personal property, which is a violation of the Constitution. There is no warrant presented.
The court order isn't a warrant.
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay.
So there's no warrant to search your house. There's no, normally a warrant would specify exactly what they're looking for.
Right.
Doesn't happen. They come to your house. They take your pistol permit, all of your firearms, and you haven't seen the inside of a courtroom.
Or, if I get this right, you're also saying you haven't been in front of anybody to decide medically whether you're competent or incompetent.
Correct.
So the doctor also isn't part of someone making a complaint? Or it does have to originate?
There are four categories of individuals in the medical field that can make this phone call to the state. It can be a physician, psychiatrist, or psychologist, a registered nurse, or a licensed social worker. All four of those categories are covered under the SAFE Act. Unfortunately, again, it's only likelihood that's considered. Now, there's been some pushback, by the way, and folks should understand this. New York State Psychiatric Association itself has come out against this provision in the SAFE Act. Dr. Glenn Martin, who is a past president of the State Psychiatric Association, said criteria that we use does not include likelihood. Now, we have no crystal ball. We can't determine that this individual is, in fact, a danger or may be a danger. You know, and plus, we look at imminent danger as a key in every other section of the mental health law. But the state, in a rush to remove guns from individuals, chose to remove that second criterion, took out the imminency portion, simply said likelihood. They then went out, well, I'll say for 3, maybe 4 months. This was after the SAFE Act was passed, so this would be the early months of 2013. And they literally trained medical providers, hospitals in particular, to make these phone calls if they felt someone might be a danger. In fact, most of the individuals that were turned in through this ISARS line in the early part of 2013 were from hospitals, literally thousands of people.
Wow. Now, I got to ask you, we're talking about the confiscation of guns here. Suppose somebody in the household, say a wife, has guns. Are her guns confiscated as well? And, I mean, doesn't she have kind of part ownership? And you know, aren't her guns being taken away when his guns are being taken away?
Not necessarily. There are provisions in the SAFE Act that will say that if an individual is unsafe and they're living in a household with someone such as a spouse,
right,
yeah, no guns can be allowed in that house. Yeah, there are provisions for that. What I'm talking about is a situation where an individual, perhaps a husband, I can give you an example, no names mentioned. In fact, if you go to our website, which is scopenewyork.org, all one word, scopenewyork.org, you will see a video where a victim literally went through this. He was outside mowing his lawn. two gentlemen came to the door in plain clothes from the state police, and one stayed upstairs with his wife while the other one went downstairs. Now, this gentleman had his guns locked up in the safe. Okay? They have grandchildren around a lot. So he kept them safely locked up. And literally, the wife had no guns of her own. Okay? Didn't possess any guns. But when they took this gentleman's pistol permit and guns, again, all they had was a piece of paper from a judge giving them that authority to do so. There was no day in court. This gentleman, excuse me, by the way, was offered the opportunity to stand in front of that judge. And this isn't an absolute necessity. Some judges do and some don't. Okay? This particular judge, it was in Wayne County, allowed him to come into the courtroom and admitted it wasn't to give him an opportunity to speak his side of the case. It was only to stand there and hear what the judge had to say. And the judge literally told him, as I was there, that I don't know who made the complaint. I don't know why it was made. But confiscation occurred. And if you remember, our governor made a statement in December of 2012, quote unquote, confiscation is an option. And that's what has been occurring in the state.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, folks who do not own guns, but may be taking medications, prescriptions from a doctor, okay, are also, by the way, possibly on this list. We believe that there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 100,000 or more citizens, law-abiding citizens in New York State, who are on this special state list simply because they may be taking a prescription for anxiety, perhaps, or depression, or whatever. Okay? It's really quite a complicated situation. You end up becoming involved with the FBI in Washington because the state notifies the FBI that you are no longer allowed to own or possess firearms. So you go on to what is called the disqualified FBI list. Okay? And as you know, ever since the Brady Check was put into place back in the 80s, if you wanted to buy a gun, or if you do want to buy a gun in this state, you have to pass a NICS check, so-called. Okay? And you fill out a form of 4473, it's called, at a gun dealer, and that FFL then calls in the information that you put on that form. The FBI has this list of disqualified individuals, and if your name pops up as disqualified, you won't buy a gun. So it's not a bad thing. Background checks, we've had them for many years. And we're not arguing against that. The point is, though, there's actually no due process for an individual who's gone through this. Let's take the case of this particular victim. And again, if someone wants to go to our website, scopenewyork.org, you will see an 8-minute video. And this video describes what this gentleman went through. Now, we're talking about a veteran, okay? A man who served for 20-some years as a, I think he was a manager for a large company. Now, in other words, he had a good job, never was in trouble. I don't even think he ever had a traffic ticket.
And by veteran, you mean military?
Military, yeah, yeah. Honorably discharged, yeah.
Now, I have a comment.
Sure.
Well, first of all, as a nurse, that's like, to me, why sign a HIPAA statement? Because that's, you're reporting and violating my privacy act there. Secondly, the due process. And thirdly, I would like to know, does the state get a kickback for calling that mandated reporting line if they do?
To my knowledge, there's no kickback. As far as HIPAA goes, By the way, very conveniently, and I believe that this was cooked up myself, this law was passed, I say law, this act, on January 15th of 2013. The very next day, January 16th of 2013, President Obama passed a regulation, I think it was an executive order, as I recall, in reference to your question on HIPAA, that allowed, in other words, it loosened up the reins that HIPAA had on the release of our medical information, okay, and allowed that information to be released under certain circumstances, which the state, of course, can define. And putting the two of those together, we ended up with a situation where individuals are obviously on the state list because they've been reported by a medical provider. They don't know they're on the list. It may not come to a problem for them down the road, but nonetheless, the fact that they're on the secret list, I think, should be of concern to everyone. I really do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot to be said here. If we get into the details of this SAFE Act and the various provisions in it, you would be surprised. People would be surprised at how badly it treats the law-abiding citizen. It takes for granted certain things that were never considered in the past, for example. And the lack of due process is number one in my mind. You know, everyone should know and have their day in court. Should know the individual who is accusing them of something and have an opportunity to refute that. It's not happening.
Yeah. Do you want to take questions from Armand or Mike?
Certainly.
I have one question.
You got to come up to the mic.
The defamation... What? Let me take that back. Going back to about the property, in New York State, if you're married, you jointly own property. That means it's 100% each. I know it sounds mathematically impossible, but your husband and wife, if you own a house, you own it jointly. I would imagine it would be the same thing with firearms. No, it's different.
It's not. And the reason for that is that The firearm, we're talking handguns now, okay, are on a pistol license. In other words, you have to apply for a pistol permit in order to own a particular handgun. And once you have that pistol permit, you are the only one legally capable of possessing that.
And were there some lawsuits back, I know this is a couple years ago now, 2013, but weren't there some lawsuits questioning the constitutionality of the SCOPE Act?
The SAFE Act?
SAFE Act, I'm sorry, SAFE Act.
Oh, absolutely. Then and they're still there.
Right, they're working their way through the courts right now.
They are. The very first one occurred in December of 2013, and we had a judge out in the Buffalo area, Judge Scretney. And he ruled, he was a federal judge, by the way, he ruled that the SAFE Act was constitutional. However, the seven-round magazine limit was not. And by the way, on January 14th of 2013, even law enforcement officers woke up and found themselves to be felons.
Right.
Because they were carrying magazines with more than seven rounds.
Yeah. Isn't that something? So all of our law enforcement officers were suddenly criminals themselves.
Themselves.
Just because they had magazines with more than seven rounds.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. But, you know, you come back to this list and the violation of HIPAA. One of the very first cases occurred out in Erie County. And there was a gentleman who had been on a medication years in the past, no longer was. The state police contacted three different individuals. They didn't know. They had one name, you know, like Don Smith. How many Don Smiths are there out there? They had three of these names. They did not know which one they were after, but they knew that one of them had been taking a medication that literally put him on their list. And they had to track him down through two different counties, by the way. Two were in one county, one in another. So the county clerks for those two counties received this information. They had to look this up and report back to the state. Eventually, the state found out who the individual was and contacted that individual. Of course, he ran into problems with his permit and so forth, too. But this was a medication he hadn't been on in years. Yeah. Again, law-abiding citizen.
Well, thank you very much for coming in. This
You're
is some
welcome.
Great information. I'm looking forward to future segments on here so we can get some more information on this.
It was very good, Don. It was very well spoken.
Thank you.
And mental health, I'm going to say it wrong, is foremost on my mind, especially for our veterans. And not because our veterans have that issue predominantly, but because I think a lot of veterans can be abused by that law.
Right.
Well, I know what triggered it. We all do. And that was the shooting in Newtown.
Right.
Isn't it a bit of a ironic to me that in 1933 they had a facility in Newtown, Connecticut, that housed mentally ill patients? In 1995, they closed that.
Yep.
That individual that, you know, was
so
the shooter.
So did Rochester. They had a place.
Yep.
The state has closed many of these facilities. They're not doing their job in terms of treating those who are mentally ill.
That's right.
That's okay. Right.
Well, stay tuned for next week, because every week Scope is going to be right here on WOKR 1310 at about 8:20 to 8:40, maybe 8:30 to 8:50, but right around there is when you want to jump in. If you want to hear Civil War Radio, you want to be here between 8 and 8:30. And then, of course, Canandaigua Facebook's news, all about the news around Ontario County, City, and Town of Canandaigua with Mike Yarger, pretty much about 9 a.m. And then 9:30, look for a special interview. And as we are coming up on this part of the show, we're going to have an interview with a state trooper, Melissa, his name?
Mark O'Donnell.
That's right, Trooper O'Donnell. And coming
Silvio
up next,
Palermo.
That's right, running for Ontario County Sheriff.
Yeah, we're excited about that one, too.
All right, we'll be right back after these messages.
I was thinking...
Welcome back to Canandaigua 1310, three men and a microphone, WOKR 1310, and I'm here today with Mike Yarger, Melissa Walker, myself, Corporal Tim Thornton, and we have an interview with Mr. Silvio Palermo, running for sheriff for Ontario County. How are you, sir?
Good. Thank you for having me, Corporal Tim.
I'm glad to have you on the show. I've been waiting a long time to have you on the show.
Yes, yes. Well, unfortunately, I have a full-time job, and normally during the day I work full-time, so that's why
I've had
trouble getting on the show here, because I'm usually at work.
You're full-time.
I'm a full-time police supervisor, yes,
that's
and
right.
I work most days, so that's prevented me from coming on the show.
How's that compare with the other candidates?
Well, I'm...
With your full-time?
Well, I'm the only full-time... law enforcement officer.
That's right. Okay. Well, it's good to know. So, tell us a little bit about your platform and what you're running on, and these are great flyers you got here. You're definitely spending some money.
Yeah. Well, let me talk a little bit about myself. I'm a lifelong resident of Ontario County. I was born and raised in Canandaigua. I attended St. Mary's Catholic School, graduated from Canandaigua Academy.
Best school there is.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Absolutely. And those nuns kept me in check, you know, up till eighth grade. I also graduated from Finger Lakes Community College and SUNY Empire State College. My wife Colleen and I currently live in the town of Victor. We have two children, our daughter Isabella, who's 22 months old, and our son Luca, who's 9 months old. So we don't get much sleep nowadays, but It's they're a trip. They're a trip. But I've spent my entire adult life working in law enforcement since the age of 20 years old, which began here at the Ontario County Sheriff's Office, as well as the Village of Penyan Police Department. I worked both agencies simultaneously for a couple of years before transferring over to the City of Canandaigua Police Department. I worked at the City of Canandaigua Police Department before transferring to the Town of Gates Police Department about 15 years ago. And I've served in law enforcement in many capacities over the past 20 years. I currently hold the rank of police sergeant with the Town of Gates Police Department, and I'm assigned as the watch commander of the Day Shift Patrol Division. And in addition to my police command experience, I've worked as a criminal investigator. I've handled investigations from a simple grand larceny all the way to homicide investigations. I'm a certified police instructor, certified firearms instructor. I currently oversee our firearms unit. I'm an active shooter instructor, a reality-based training instructor. I'm an instructor evaluator, and I currently oversee the field training program within our department. But in addition to my law enforcement experience, I have other experience. In 2011, I decided to run for the Victortown Board and become a leader in my community. I was elected as a councilman, taking office in 2012, and I was reelected to a second term in 2015. And during my tenure on the Victortown Board, I was proud to serve as the Victor Deputy Town Supervisor. So I have a strong combination of law enforcement experience as well as local municipality experience and budgeting experience as well. So I have my experience doesn't end with just law enforcement.
Yeah, that's an important experience to have budgeting experience. Because
absolutely.
That's got to be one of the toughest things for all the candidates they have to deal with.
Absolutely. You know, and certainly the sheriff's office has a big budget. And I also have a bachelor's degree that I obtained from SUNY Empire State College. So I have very well-rounded experience from education, law enforcement, as well as local municipality to take on this job.
That is good. I mean, that's what you want, right?
Right.
In your leadership, can you talk more about the leadership part? Because in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. it's going to come down to management and mm-hmm. management style.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good thing about my leadership ability is for the last 12 years, that's what I've done. I've managed law enforcement. I'm up to date with my management of law enforcement, which in today's world, law enforcement has changed so drastically over the last decade and two decades that to have that up-to-date management in today's law enforcement world is very important because I understand what law enforcement's needs are in today's world. And which is very important. And it's about working as a team. And now the new police officers, it's the millennium generation. And it's not like before, 20 years ago when I started, once you made rank, you had automatic respect and you had automatic trust because of the rank. But in today's world, you have to earn that. You have to earn the men and women's trust. You have to earn their respect, and it's about leading from the front, and it's about working as a team and having them have involvement in the everyday decisions. That's what's important. Teamwork is important, and that's how you lead. You lead from the front, and it's all about working together as a cohesive team.
I like that. Sylvia, talk to me a little bit about, you know, of course, everybody's going to ask you this question, the opioid addiction, mm-hmm. New York State. But I'm also interested in your level of learning on, like, forensic and the new things that you're going to have to deal with. Like you said, millennials, you know, that. But there's so much more that you being involved in law enforcement over the last 20 years puts you in a position to probably manage the culture that you're going to be working with.
Yes, and certainly the culture is very diverse now, and you have to adapt to that. And being involved in it every single day gives you a better understanding of what's different and what do you need to change. And certainly one of the strong things about working in Monroe County is the diversity. One minute you're dealing with a gang member, the next minute you're dealing with middle-class America, which is very important to understand all sides of law enforcement. So diversity is really key. And the advances of law enforcement, and certainly with the technology, and being involved in an advanced law enforcement environment is certainly a plus. And having that understanding of all the advancements that law enforcement has occurred over the years.
Okay, Sylvia, I got to ask you a couple questions here.
Sure.
You talked on your platform about eliminating some unnecessary spending.
Yeah.
Okay, where do you see the unnecessary spending taking place?
Well, there's certainly... it's a matter of getting in that job and actually looking through the budget and finding out what has been working, what hasn't been working, what needs to improve. Okay, so once you get in that job, you're going to find out the things that have been working and the things that hasn't been working.
Right.
And the things that hasn't been working, that's what you need to eliminate.
To get rid of the program
right. itself.
Okay.
And if you look at the jail, and 80% of the inmates currently in the county jails suffer from either addiction or mental health illness. We need to take a good look at what programs have been working, what programs we need to improve, or what programs we need to add. So that's one scope that you can take a look at and see, do we need to cut something that hasn't been working, and we can save some money. And
right,
also,
because recidivism, I mean, that's a huge cost to our community, right?
It is.
So
but
if we can reduce that.
Sure. But it's also about working with the state legislatures and the federal government for grant opportunities. There's a lot of grants in law enforcement. The Department of Homeland Security has many, many grants. We need to work with our state and federal officials and try to see what money is available. And any money that comes in a grant, obviously, is a reduction in other areas of the budget.
Right, right. So that's important to go
after those
grants. Okay. I also want to ask you about increasing the education training for law enforcement. What types of programs are coming out that they need training in?
Well, as the scope of law enforcement continues, responsibilities continues to increase, it is necessary that training requires a higher level. If you look at the addiction, a lot of law enforcement don't have the addiction training. They don't have the understanding of the addiction. And the other scope of it is mental health. Mental health is something that's really taken off over the last few years. Our law enforcement officers aren't really that equipped to deal with mental health illness. So we need to better prepare our law enforcement officers in dealing with people with addiction and mental health, because we're dealing with those people on a daily basis. And the jail deputies are dealing with these people constantly.
Right.
Their whole shift.
Right.
We need better training in regards to dealing with these people and having a better understanding of what the illness is all about and what addiction is all about.
Okay, well, I think we're about out of time, but I want to thank you for coming in. It's great to finally get you here. We had your opponents on already, and, you know, we've really been looking forward to this opportunity to get a chance to talk to you.
Thank you.
So thank you for sharing the information with us.
Thank you, and I hope I can come back.
You can always come back, and we're glad to have you. And if you want to end it with, you know, where people can find you, learn more about Silvio, throw that at us.
I have a website. It's SilvioPalermoFirstSheriff.com, and you can also find me on Facebook. I have a Facebook campaign page, Silvio Palermo First Sheriff 2018.
Great.
That's great. I got this ticket. I really do have a serious question for you. I was at the post office the other day, and I saw these wanted posters. And it brings me to this question. If you already had them, and you were taking a picture, why don't you just keep them?
They did have them, Tim.
They did have them.
And then they had to release them. This is what the recidivism
is about,
right?
Okay. That's right.
That's why we got to reduce the recidivism rate.
That's right. That's right. We got to reduce the revolving door.
That's a Seinfeld joke, by the way. Thanks. Thank you, Sheldon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Combat Radio Network. on Channel 1310 WOKR. This has been the Civil War Radio, and coming up next, Three Men and a Microphone. You can check us out every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. and every Sunday afternoon, an encore performance, 2 in the afternoon to 4 p.m. Thank you again for listening to Combat Radio Network, brought to you by the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, where they are 5,000 feet of pure 100% military.